The following is a special presentation of Western New York Catholic Audio, recorded April 17th, 2024. Portions were edited to eliminate long pauses and unwanted noises. Opinions expressed within the interview are those solely of the participants and not necessarily those of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Buffalo. Hello, my name is Michael Mroziak. I'm with the Communications Department for the Diocese of Buffalo. In 1983, a new television program premiered on Public Broadcasting Service, simply known as PBS to most of us, a program that was designed to inspire and encourage children to read and to love reading. That program was Reading Rainbow, which continued to run until 2006. Reruns continued it through 2009. It would go on to win more than 250 various awards, including 26 Emmys. Among Reading Rainbow's co-creators and executive producers was Tony Patino, a Western New Yorker who worked as a producer at WNED-TV in Buffalo. Patino poured a love of education into the show, and as a devout Catholic, he also poured his love of Jesus Christ into his work, just as he does with all facets of his life. Patino has co-authored a book about the show. It's titled Creating Reading Rainbow, The Untold Story of a Beloved Children's Series. I am now joined by Tony Patino, and I look forward to celebrating his work and its legacy and learning more about his faith. Tony, thank you so much for welcoming me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I look forward to talking more about Reading Rainbow, but sure. As I just mentioned, yes. You are a devout Catholic. Your family is very devoutly Catholic. Yes. I want to start by talking about your Catholic upbringing and how that influenced you and prepared you to go into professional life.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because my early years, I went to public school six. We had two churches nearby, St. Columba and St. Lucy's Church in down that area. So my family used to take me to church. My mother did the novenas, of course. We went to evening novenas, brought us to church every Sunday. And St. Columba was a very fine parish at that point. Then I moved on. We moved to South Buffalo. I went to Bishop Tyman High School. Loved the Franciscan priests there. They were just wonderful to us and, you know, learned an awful lot about Christ and was a member of the societies that they had there. On to college, Ithaca College. For some reason, one of my friends brought me into the choir there. So we'd sing at church every day. I didn't have a great voice, but it was loud. When I got married to my lovely wife, Sue Novelli Butino, she was a saint. And a lot of what she did brought us into, you know, loving Christ and God. In fact, she was involved with, at St. Catherine of Siena Parish, she was involved with the Rite of Christian Initiation Adults. So we got to know a lot about our church and our thoughts with new people who became, you know, Christians. And that was an important part of our life. Went to church with our children, every Sunday, even though I thought, oh my goodness, do we have to dress the kids up again and go to church? And she thought, yes, maybe we did. And so our five children, we went to join St. Catherine of Siena Church, which was a vibrant community. In fact, there's a lot of what was there that we brought to other churches later. But at St. Catherine's, we were involved with the very first mission. I mean, mission has become a big thing in many churches now. And it came through St. Gerard Church and St. Catherine, Father Len, Father John, and Father Leo, Len Benescavich, brought it to our church. And we were part of the first mission there, which is a seven-day, very, very intense and beautiful celebration of learning about our church. And then we had things like the Hope Fund. It's called Helping People Everywhere, Helping Our People Everywhere, which was donating extra amounts of money besides your normal envelope into a fund that would help the poor, basically. So we did a lot of that. When St. Catherine's closed, we brought a lot of what was at St. Catherine to, for example, Queen of Heaven has adoration 24 hours a day. That was at our church at St. Catherine. We brought the Hope Fund to St. Vincent de Paul Church. And basically, that's kind of a the story of our involvement with the church. We do a lot of things for homeless families. I do something now for immigrants that come over and need food, clothing, money. There's a book called When God Winks at You that I had, and there are certain things in there that I really thought about. Things like you call out to God for help, and He helps. He's a good father that way. And some of the books that are just so interesting to know something about how we can practice our faith in a lot of different ways.
And as you, even to this day, do Christ-like deeds through your professional career, you are also enriching young minds by encouraging reading.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk about Reading Rainbow.
Sure.
You co-created it. It was in response to a concern about children and their loss of reading skills over summer vacation.
Yes.
Talk about how that came to your attention and when you decided we have to do something about this.
Sure. Well, I was the instructional television coordinator for Channel 17. It was a job I didn't really know existed until spending many, many months in the production element. When I graduated from Ithaca College, I got into production, camera, producing, directing. I loved it. I thought, you know, this is my career for the rest of my life. But according to Proverbs 16:9, it says, "In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps." And in Yiddish terms, it says, "We plan, God laughs." So I accepted this position not knowing what it was, but soon finding out that you can use television for learning. So I did that for a number of years, just probably 10 years of instructional television coordinating, using television in the classrooms and learning how kids. In fact, we did shows. There was a Sister Mary who taught phonics, and we lovingly called her Sister Mary Phonics, but I went into a class when, you know, videotape came out. I went into a classroom and I sat down in the classroom and she came on the video out there. And she said, the first thing she kind of said was, she looked around, she says, "Somebody's not sitting up tall." And all the kids in the classroom were looking around. They looked at me. I said, "I'm sitting up tall. I'm okay." But you could feel that personal thing when you got a good talent. And I think of Mr. Rogers all the time as being one of the best talents I've seen. So anyway, the television for learning was a thing that I worked on. And as I worked on this, I came across the idea of, well, we had all kinds of shows, German, we had French, we had all kinds of, we had the phonics, we had American literature, which was a course that I directed. But as I went along, I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I have a thoughts about marketing. And I had the thought, well, maybe we could kind of like promote the idea of marketing a special curriculum. So I kind of stacked the deck and I had a committee of like 50 people. It was a general assembly. I was representing all these school districts in Western New York, basically, who we brought the materials to. And we decided to concentrate on, of all things, reading, which I said, wow, oh, that's nice. So I started doing some things concerning about reading, and I fell into what you described earlier about kids not reading over the summer. It's called the summer loss phenomenon. And of course, California gave it a name, you figure. So, but for me as a parent, that was just a simple, you know, common sense. You know, you don't play the piano for 2 months, you got to pick up on it. Summer reading fell off quite a bit, and we found out, of course, teachers, when kids came back to school, they kind of had spent a lot of time. And I figure, well, this is a problem. I mean, it's a problem, and I really felt that God said, you know, we could solve this problem somehow. I mean, I know television, I know it can do, and we probably can just do something about that phenomenon. So We did a couple of things with that. We started with a summer series. I looked into the idea of using a series of programs. There weren't too many available, so we got a program called Studio C. And the reason I selected it primarily is you're able to give transcripts of the program so that, and the commercial stations did this with Happy Days and a few others where they said, and if you want to know, read about the book or read about the program, send it in. So I picked summer reading. I picked Studio C, it was called. And they did indeed give out transcripts. I worked with the libraries, worked with reading teachers. And this was kind of a, I was really concerned that here I am, a television person, going out talking to reading teachers and, you know, librarians about reading. I mean, it was like television. Actually, television was thought to be as an enemy. When you think of it, teachers used to say, turn off the TV, parents, let them read a book. Well, so there am I out there, the television guy, saying, okay, you know, maybe we could do something a little different than turning off the TV. Maybe we could help you.
So is that really kind of the hook of Reading Rainbow? Use the television to be the one that says, hey, you really should be picking up a book here.
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly it. Well, we spent, to summarize, we spent 5 summers using programs that we thought, in fact, we produced one with Mr. McFeely for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, as a matter of fact. He did some raps. He did an early thing about, at the beginning, talked about a word play. It was just a cute way of introduction. Then we showed a program that had something about books, Spinning Stories, it was called. Then Mr. McFeely would come back on and do a little craft, and then we'd show another program. Then he'd do a closing, which pretty much said, you know, go and read kind of thing. That gave us experience in doing things over the summer. We brought in librarians. In fact, the very first summer, I'm thinking we didn't do well, the Studio C thing. We did not do too well. But we had a woman at the library that worked with us. Her name was Diane Chrisman. And talk about, you know, God changing plans. I was tempted to just say, that's it, man. It didn't work out. So she sends me a letter. Yeah, you know, it didn't work out, da-da-da-da-da. And at the very end, she says, I'm looking forward to planning next summer. I'm thinking, boy, if God intervened, that was it. I mean, that was it. I said, okay, well, let's do it. And we kept doing it for the 5 summers, leading to the idea of the Reading Rainbow, basically. After all that time, ITV for 10 years, the 5 years of the summer, finally we're saying, well, maybe we could do something from scratch. And what would it be? So as it happened, I had an intern come in, and I had thoughts. I mean, I had thoughts about the format. I just follow, you know, basically Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers. Basically, not the Sesame Street approach, which is fine for what it was, but my tack was a little bit more of a Mr. Rogers approach. You know, having a good host, and I do remember having committee meetings, of course, and one of the committee people was Bill Eller from the University of Buffalo. He was president of the International Reading Association, and he came to one of our meetings. We're talking about this thing, that thing, and this thing, and he said, why don't we just do what television does best? Why don't we motivate kids to read? And that was it. I mean, I don't know. You know, God probably told him to tell me that. And I says, that's it. We could probably use that approach. Show me a kid who reads, I'll show you a better reader. And that was the beginning of proposals that we started writing about Reading Rainbow.
And in 1983, Reading Rainbow made its debut.
Yes, yes.
And became a phenomenon. In fact, only 2 other shows, Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Sesame Street, had longer runs on PBS.
That's true. Yes. We had 26 years. That's not a bad run.
When you look back at something like that and you realize Reading Rainbow, you know, really can be considered one of the iconic shows of public broadcasting.
I think it is. I think so. Yes. I mean, it wasn't that easy. We had to find some money. So we put in a proposal that for $1.3 million to produce 20 shows, and that failed. We did not get the money, but we did get a chance to submit for a pilot, and we put more research and evaluation into that, so we got money for that and went on from there with the pilot with LeVar Burton. I don't know if you remember the blizzard of 1977, mm-hmm. when we were all in the houses and waiting and watching TV. Well, Kunta Kinte was in there with Roots. And
that's right.
The interesting thing about that, not to decide, but the book was based on the book. Mm-hmm. And the book sold a lot of copies after that, which to me said, because some people said, oh, no, we don't want to show a book on television because people watch that and they won't buy it. This was the opposite. And that said to me, well, we could probably do that with kids. Let's motivate the kids to read and pick a good piece of literature as our subject matter. I designed a format, and I think I used a term, why don't we use kids to tell other kids, you know, what they think about a book? And, you know, how adults do that. Adults say, oh, you got to read this book. You got to read this book. So I kind of like, I called it something else. It became the book reviews that we saw. And they're very, well, very popular kinds of things. And we moved on from there, basically.
Yeah. And you talked about funding. It was a struggle. Corporation for Public Broadcasting, yes. Mm-hmm. They'd meet you halfway. They'd provide you some of the money, half of it, if not all of it. Yes. But that still, I'm sure, created very stressful moments as to figure, how are we going to pay for all this? How much did you fall upon your faith to be able to get you through that obstacle?
Well, you know, the funding, interestingly thing, we didn't get the first one. And, you know, there's always prayer in my families. They're always saying, you know, we'll say a prayer about doing this kind of thing. And, you know, there's certainly things that we pray about when we wanted to do this project, which we thought was a very, you know, obviously we thought it was a very good idea. And we pray a lot for different functions. If the kids are feeling sick, you know, our family comes together. In fact, interestingly, in where we lived in West Seneca, we had a child behind us who was in a bicycle accident, really bad. Neighbors decided to come together and pray for her. And so we did. We prayed constantly. She came through very well with that. She did come through. But interestingly, we formed a prayer group because of that. We would pray every day at somebody's different house in the neighborhood. Just go in there and sit in early morning and pray for whatever we thought we could do. And that became a big thing. And then Bible study came out of that. We're still doing Bible studies. We do it on Zoom now. We do it once a week on Mondays with some of the same people from that parish. And people, we have friends that moved from St. Catharines down in Florida. They're part of it. So using the technology, not to get off the sub, but using the technology to pray and do Bible studies is a wonderful thing that we appreciate these days.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so prayer got you through those moments at work and in your neighborhood.
Yes.
You mentioned a moment ago Fred Rogers being an inspiration. Yes. You've met.
Yes, yes. Had to meet him.
Fred was a Presbyterian minister and was very open about his faith. Did the two of you ever get a chance to discuss your respective faiths?
Not really, but I think we understood that we had our faiths. In fact, actually, I met him through Dave Newell, who was the Mr. McFeely that I mentioned earlier. He was the public relations guy. So I said, you know, I like the idea of Fred Rogers, you know, and his show. So my wife and I did visit him and talk pretty much, you know, about the show and about that. But I did know he was a minister. And in fact, when we chose LeVar Burton, he was going into a seminary. He was thinking of going into a seminary. And I thought immediately about, wow, what a nice, God said something here. Here's Fred Rogers. Here's LeVar Burton. He did not go into the seminary, but his faith came through. But we didn't, Mr. Rogers, he was just this kindly gentleman, just this wonderful Christian person who you could just talk to. And he would listen and listen, and then he would think about something, and it was just an amazing meeting with him. Yeah.
Even if you weren't necessarily outward with your Christian faith in your productions, does it seem to make sense to you that it's not a coincidence that that faith in God, faith in Christ, really helped all of you blossom respectively in your productions and your careers?
Yeah. Well, like I said, the one about, you know, when I was in production and they asked me if I would be interim instructional television director. I said, wait, this is probably God talking. This is, you know, the thing about in his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. That's Proverbs 16:9. So, I mean, that was the beginning of things that, you know, said, well, you know, I didn't have any education background. Most of the instructional television directors in the country were teachers at one point. I didn't have any of that. So God said, well, do it anyway. So I was the interim. And I think actually that was an advantage that I didn't have that because I kept asking my committees, something about them. I did a survey. The first thing I did was a survey asking them, tell me what you think. What are your goals? This, and they pretty much said, this is interim. I was just, and they said, they went to my boss, I guess, and said, you know, we like to have Tony be the full-time coordinator. And I said, oh, okay, things are going well. So I did take that position, like I mentioned earlier, and learned a lot about instructional television. And, you know, my faith came in a lot of different ways as I went through this. You know, prayer is important, was very important to Sue. And like I said, the neighborhood, and he talked to our friends, especially at St. Catherine of Siena, and we get together with charismatic movements and mission and other things called Better World. And all of a sudden you're building this faith to go out into the community and help, from my standpoint, helping others. The idea of homeless families is big with us, and now with the immigration, people come in. We also are sponsoring a group called Buffalo House of Hope out in Athol Springs. So, you know, there's a lot that we can do, I think, to help, you know, go out there and help your neighbor, you know, things like that.
The business now, it's changed, but somewhere out there might be a producer who also has a strong faith. They don't necessarily feel that they might be allowed to apply it to their craft. What do you say to a person of faith who might be entering this business who doesn't think they can apply their craft? What do you say to them?
Well, you know, I do run across people now and then. I don't always ask what faith they are, but, you know, I get into the same things we're talking about here, depending on where they are. You know, the whole idea of prayer is important, as I mentioned. The idea of doing good for others seems to be a mission and a goal that I have. But, you know, there's always some way to help help others who are less fortunate. And I think that's big. We're very fortunate to have a family and have, you know, what our needs are. But some people don't have that. And I really think that they should, especially the immigrants that have been through so much to get over here. I said, if they get here, we want to help them out, you know.
You're doing all sorts of works of mercy. And you think about the work of mercy of educating the uninformed. In this case, you know, a kid can really learn something by picking up a book.
Yeah.
When you look back upon that as potentially as a work of mercy, what do you remember most fondly about your run with Reading Rainbow?
Well, you know, in its premiere season, 6.5 million viewers saw at least one episode a week. And the ratings were equal to those of Mr. Rogers and Electric Company. This is based on an article that Ellen Pergament wrote in the Buffalo News. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, 6.5 million kids are reading and, you know, reading lots of things, you know, hopefully the Bible thing. And we just motivated them to enjoy reading. And then I think that's, wow, when I read that in the news, I said, that's a pretty good deal. And then that was the first year. And you can imagine as years went on, 26 years, different children, another 6.5 million at a certain end. And our target was the first and second grader. They say that that's a kind of a turning point in whether you're going to be a reader or not. I mean, by high school, maybe kids are reading or aren't, but if we could pinpoint that target audience, the first beginning readers, that's what we did. That we got from reading teachers and librarians to say, yeah. So that's who we pinpointed, and I'm sure in that 6.5 million, there were a lot of kids that were from the first or second grade, let's say. So that worked out.
Now you have a new book coming out that looks back on your Reading Rainbow experience. The title of it is Creating Reading Rainbow, The Untold Story of a Beloved Children's Series. Mm-hmm. What are some of the important points that you think are being said in that book?
Well, the book, they're saying that the book is available where books are sold. So I think that's where we're at. We're hoping to put it out a little bit more and launch some book signings and things like that probably in July, and it's based on you know, it's based on the Reading Rainbow series. A lot of it has to do with the beginnings that we just talked about, but also the books that are available. When actually in Buffalo, we actually did the book reviews here at the first few years. That the book reviews became, you know, like we said, kids telling other kids to go look at this book because you'll like it. So we've been doing a lot of that. We did that in the books, and the librarians will tell you, yeah, they know that the kids are coming in because they can tell them, librarian, what the name of the book was. First thing, or they could describe the book. And librarian, we were able to work with librarians so well. I mean, it just came together. I think God brought librarians, reading teachers, and public television together, to tell you the truth. And they came on board. At first, it was a little bit of a struggle because teachers and librarians had their summer school set up in a certain way. And then here I am coming in and saying, hey, you want to try this a little bit? And I tell you, the Buffalo community, I got to give them a lot of credit. They were wonderful. I was really, in fact, I laugh over it. I was really tempted to think that I was going to be thrown out of libraries. I was going to go in there, a TV person, going into a library and getting kicked out. Well, I was wrong. That never happened. They listened. They said, well, you know, maybe here, maybe there. And they just came together and supported it from day one. You know, after a while, after we got on the air and it proved itself, like we said, the first year, 6.5 million kids and librarians are saying, well, you know, maybe there's something to all this. And then we started working more. The more they were interested, the more we said, listen, here's the books that are going to come out next year. And we had to do that. They wanted to know, what are you guys going to do next year? What are the books that we should have to get in? And they did that. And I was so pleased that kind of happened. And I've been blessed that something like that happened with what they were doing and what they wanted to do with us. And that was perfect. Perfect idea.
But don't take our word for it.
Yeah, don't take my word. Yeah. I think a librarian may have come up. Well, either that or a library, or there's a controversy as to who said that. But obviously, LeVar did that, and a lot of our kids were on, like I said, the book reviews in the first few years, and then became kind of a big thing, and a lot of it moved over to New York City with the people we hired, the people, you know, that I found actually. It just the momentum, you know, this whole thing about starting somewhere, continuing, praying about it, continuing, praying about it, and moving on, it just seemed to work out pretty well. We had our difficult times, and in fact, I in the book called Holy Moments, it kind of mentioned when you're discouraged to press on, and that's what I did. That's what I did, and thank God I did that.
Tony Bettino, it's been an absolute honor to sit here and learn more about Reading Rainbow and learn more about you as a devout, Christ-loving Catholic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.